Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Work Stories is a place for women of color to share their experiences in the workplace. We're no longer whispering these stories to our best friends and partners and then shoving them to the backs of our minds and just dealing. We're talking about bias, equal pay, bad bosses, racist hiring practices, and all the crazy things your coworkers have done or said to you. This is a safe place to tell those stories. The floor is open, y'all. We are telling it all. Welcome back to Work Stories. Today's guest is a true professional Renaissance woman with a little or a lot of fight in her. Let's chat with Sheila.
I'm going to jump right to the part where I'm logging in from my office pod in the forest. I like to start there, logging in from Vancouver Island in Canada. I don't know if you've been to the west coast of Canada.
No.
But it is a rainforest and quite gorgeous. And I ended up here by accident in my mid-20s. Over time, I've been kind of working away at getting a lifestyle that lets me be as in the woods as possible.
Nice. Nice. Well, thank you for allowing us into your forest.
No problem. In my day-to-day, I work with Yuvaro. I'm the director of member programming, very focused on career success for all of our members. I'm a mother of three. My eldest is 10. My youngest is 11 months.
Wow.
Part of why I love being able to work remotely is because it lets me throw them outside all the time. I just like, please get out of the house. Right. And that's been working pretty well.
Oh, nice. Tell us about your career trajectory. Like, how did you start off your career and what were your goals in the beginning?
Yeah. And I love that question because I have to address it from so many different perspectives frequently as I'm teaching and working with people. I would describe my career as not a straight line at all, ever. Definitely hasn't been a logical trajectory if you were to look back on it. From this perspective, it all makes sense, of course. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is why I am here now. But I traditionally just chose the direction that let me, from where I was at that time, make the biggest impact in areas that were most meaningful for me at any given point in time. So originally that meant crisis intervention with at-risk communities because it was important to me and it felt like an area I could make big change in. And then, of course, life and circumstance shifts priorities. So I did crisis intervention for a while and burnt myself out, as you do. And so I shifted gears entirely and went into business ownership in health, fitness, and martial arts, which allowed me to still help people, but also take care of myself. Because if you've ever skirted burnout, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And it's so not sustainable. And then from there, I was quite happily trucking along entrepreneurship, opening, you know, secondary gyms, that kind of thing. And then my personal life exploded in all of the worst possible ways. And I was trying to parent children while running all of these businesses and realized that I needed to change everything and really ideally be more involved with my family, my siblings, because we were pretty tight-knit and I was on the West Coast while they're all East Coast and it just didn't feel right. So enter tech, remote role. I took an entry-level tech sales job after having been a business owner for 9 years with a master's in education. And it was one of the biggest cataclysms I've experienced, but panned out in a really big way and allowed me to take control in the way that I wanted to. So working remotely, being able to put the time into my kids that I wanted to, and of course, being more connected to my family, who at that time was also working in tech.
So I'm thinking, so you have this, your master's in education, you have all this experience running a business. I feel like that has to come in handy in tech sales. So can you kind of talk to us about how you're using those skills that you had already developed to do your job now?
Absolutely. They're so hand in hand. And I've, since moving into career support, the number of times I've heard founders, hiring managers, talent and HR people say that they want a sales rep with an entrepreneurial mindset. The skill set that comes with building and growing a business from the ground up and then running it, I just call it accountability and agency. So early on in tech sales, I was pulling from that skill set, as well as, of course, just the experience with running a business. You learn a lot about how different levels of management interact with one another. So I'll say that it fueled it from the get-go, but it also influenced the directions that I took things as I started to progress in my career within tech. And that's because of contrast. So I was a business owner in a very male-dominated space, I think is the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah.
Right. Fitness, martial arts, and just the contrast of doing that while doing the master's in education. You know, you show up to campus, you go to class and having these really intense conversations and learning experiences with a really wide range of people who, for the most part, listen to and hear what I had to say. Not perfect, of course.
Yeah.
But compared to what I was up against trying to run a business in fitness, trying to run a business in martial art, it just the contrast was wild to me. So then when I moved into tech, I kind of dove in with rose-colored glasses. And after time, realizing that it wasn't all as rosy as it felt in comparison, realizing, okay, there's still work to be done here, it did influence the list of non-negotiables that came up as I was looking for leadership, looking for, you know, the missions to tie myself to.
Wow. I think of this often, like the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
One industry, especially probably people listening to the show, right? They're in one industry. They listen to an episode and they hear about somebody's life in another industry and they think, oh, all these benefits. Oh, look, it's, you know, the demographics are better, blah, blah, blah. And there's always something.
Yeah.
Something. So can you just give us a little taste of like, what are the specific challenges being a woman in tech in general and like being a woman of color? Okay, because that's another level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the comparison piece is going to come up.
Yeah.
And it's because of the contrast of owning a business in a space where it is normal for everyone you encounter to assess your abilities, worth, legitimacy based on your body. Right? Working in fitness is very normal. Like I've had coworkers participate in a poll of like, which female trainer has the better butt? Awesome.
Oh my God. Why did I never think? I never thought about it like that.
Right. Yeah. And so that was wild, super frustrating. And part of why I stopped being an employee, like in fitness, why I opened my own business was it was like, well, fuck that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So one of the gyms I opened was a women's only space because just the reality of what it's like to go into a gym as a woman, there's just extra layers of things you have to think about and pressure that you have to deal with. So that was one of the businesses I opened while simultaneously running a martial arts school, which again is very male dominated. And it's quite normal for people to come in with assumptions. If you're female and you're working in the space, general assumption is you're typically not as whatever competent, strong, capable as any of the men in the space. It's just very natural because physicality, and it didn't matter that I had, you know, twice the experience, twice the learning, twice the capabilities on a technical front as any of the men that I was teaching, any of the men that I employed. The typical assumption was that I was the receptionist.
Oh, wow.
And then moving into tech and finding this world where people are at least aware of the fact that they're operating with bias for the most part, again, and just a space where it is, compared to fitness and martial arts, less acceptable to kind of spew those assumptions around. Not to say that I didn't run into them, but the frequency was much less. And that felt like a huge relief. The first little while, it was just like, okay, this is different. All right. And then starting to encounter things here and there. I am mixed race. I call it mixed feels. My siblings and I joke about that because it's very, not quite one thing, but not quite another. And then feeling like there's some spaces I can pass in and then others that, you know, I don't know that I should. And there's a lot of convoluted thoughts and feelings around a really mixed genetic bag. And then because of the type of mix I am, I encounter both kinds of stereotypes, some positive, some negative. And some of them, it's been like, okay, I recognize what's going on here. I'm just going to accept this because it's super useful. Should I be doing that? I don't know. And then there's just all these layers of complication to existence.
Yeah.
And then over time, you know, the career progresses, roles change, you meet new team members. The thing that I've most often encountered in this space is just people's level of discomfort with understanding how to interface with me. Ooh. And that was a thing I wasn't prepared for. It was wasn't a thing that I had anticipated until I ran into it. It was like, oh, okay, that's a little strange. I'm being told I'm hard to read while I communicate in a way that I think is very transparent. That's not how I'm being interpreted. Oh, right. And now I know why.
Yeah.
So that's been a bit of a process for sure.
Oh my God, that is interesting. And I feel like you probably get the most honest version of people.
Sometimes I think so. And I don't know if that's mixed or the parts of me that pass.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I often get honest parts of people, sometimes more than they're aware.
Huh. Go back to what you were saying about feeling, what did you say, a complicated existence?
Yeah, the layers.
No, that's interesting. I'm just thinking if, you know, showing up in the workplace is hard enough. I mean, all the different challenges that in any industry, but feeling like there's just complication with the basis of who you are, I would imagine that peaks its head out in the workplace too.
Yeah. And I think that the blurriness when it comes to articulating identity from a racial lens, it layers itself into decisions that I make or don't make, communication norms, that kind of thing. I have found since moving into tech that I've been able to really think through something as simple as voice. We're sitting here doing a voice-only recording, and I simplified it when I said, oh, this is very cool. It's not just cool. It's actually, in my mind, a huge win. I'm very soft-spoken in the real world. And it's not, like, oh, she's got a quiet voice. I literally, in conversation, am not heard 3 or 4 times. I try to project all the time. My voice comes out very quiet. And when I was in martial arts and fitness, all day, every day, I felt like I was operating at a yell in order to be heard. And that's tiring. I don't know, maybe my ears are hypersensitive. But I moved into tech and always have a headset on. I've always got a mic in front of my face. Like, people can hear me. I don't have to do that extra strain in order to communicate. And being able to lean into voice was big for me. And, you know, we do video calls all the time. When I teach, I'm typically on video, but I am very aware of how heavily I rely on amplification.
Yeah. When it comes to leadership, right? Moving up the ladder and fulfilling the goals you have for yourself, how does that voice come in? How does that commanding a space? Oftentimes, at least the leaders that are put in our face are usually like the loudest in the room, the most extroverted, the biggest personalities, a little showboaty, you know? And it sounds like you're the opposite of that. So how do you look at leadership knowing that you might be different from the typical leader?
I have experienced it in a number of different contexts, and that frustration of seeing like extroversion being the quality, consistently being rewarded.
Yeah.
And then also trying to operate as the only in a room, even in a digital space, like it's palpable. And then in a room like that, being the only, whether it's woman, person of color, or both, which is often the case, recognizing that tendency and how it was getting in my way. And it was interfering with my ability to not just work with a team, but to be seen for what I was doing. And it went on and persisted for quite some time with one particular team that I'm thinking of. And it got to a point where I felt like I had to either be able to say something or leave. Because if I said something and change happened, awesome. If I said something and change didn't happen, that was my sign. Because I hit a threshold that took me longer to find because of the contrast of the past industries that I've worked in. But I did end up having some very uncomfortable conversations, and it took witnessing the just different ways candidates were being evaluated. They would never have said based on race, but of course. And it was, I think, the most physically uncomfortable I've been in a digital space, which was wild. Like having the shaky voice, the stomach churning, all of the physical feelings of not being safe. And I talked through it with a team that really struggled at first to hear what I was saying. But as soon as they did hear and understood, were willing to start the work to try to correct what was happening. It didn't flip a switch. It didn't magically change the way my voice was heard in a room, but it did start a snowball effect with a handful of people in leadership to be deliberate about making space for other voices. So a question's on the table. The normal thing happens where the loud extroverted people chime in.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where a few people in leadership would start with the question on the table and ask me to start. And that was like, okay, all right. That's interesting. This is a person who's trying to make the space for my voice. I'll take that. Yeah. Okay. And it, like I said, it wasn't a switch flip, but it was a pretty significant milestone for me and was a huge part of why I decided to stay with that team at the time. So I won't say it's ever been a perfect path, but I tie the ability to make movement and change like this to that list of non-negotiables I mentioned, the what you seek for in leadership. And I think really early on, having hard conversations, like the what if conversations, here's a scenario, how do you deal with it? It goes a long way to getting a little bit of insight into what they're actually like, what they're actually about. Again, that's not like a perfect tactic to filter everything out, but it gives you a bit of a picture.
Yeah. I'm glad that they were receptive to some extent about what you had shared and that was your experience. I'm feeling like when I have had this conversation in a small way a lot, because I think I've just had some experience. Now, I'm not the one who is the quiet one, but I've worked with people that I'm trying to empower who have the softer voices, who need a little more processing time also, who might be younger, because sometimes that's a thing when you're newer in an industry, you just don't necessarily have this big opinion 2 seconds after the conversation started, and just a lot of other factors. What I do notice is, and tell me if you see this, is that sometimes women, and I'll note definitely women who look like me, have to be the biggest like voice in the room, have to be extroverted, have to have an opinion on every call. Because if we don't, it's oftentimes what's wrong. You don't have anything to say. You're not on it. You're not focused. You're not this. And so oftentimes I wonder what I would be like in a professional setting if I didn't have the pressure of having to perform like that.
Interesting.
Maybe I am more introverted. Maybe I am more soft-spoken. And maybe I've just done this act for so long that I've become someone completely different.
Right. A learned survival behavior almost.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if other people have that experience. Like, you know, what are the pressures? And it might be different in different industries or teams. But yeah, sometimes it feels like for women, you can't just be quiet, because then people are automatically going to assume some like intelligence thing, or, oh, you don't know your stuff. You know, you're not really as well versed in the subject as the men in the room.
Mm-hmm. Even not having the chance to air thoughts in a group setting, it means bringing a complete thought that then is further scrutinized after the fact. It's interesting. Maybe I used the wrong word when I said a survival instinct. It's like a growth and thriving instinct, because it does feel like without that, there's the dangers of stagnation or to be misinterpreted like you're describing. Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm thinking about the transition from customer-facing teams to product teams, and what an interesting shift that's been. It takes the idea of extroversion and the ways of communicating, and it kind of gives me a different perspective to think about it. My current role, our team recently went through a change up where the delivery member programming side of things sits with the product team now, whereas previously it sat with revenue. And just the difference in how meetings are run has been pretty eye-opening for me. Yeah, there's almost less instinct to let the extroverted loud talker run the idea. There is more of a tendency to go through everything bit by bit. It's been interesting.
I guess, yeah, it would depend on like types of teams and different areas. And also like some jobs attract a certain type of person. So if you're on a team where everybody is like waiting for the other person to start, or no, you go. Right. I'm still thinking. I'm surprised. I don't know. I'm just thinking like IT and like some places where people are like notoriously quiet, or, you know, I wonder how those conversations go. So yeah, it could be different, but I like that you've asserted like what you need in a space to be successful and to also just like give the good ideas. Like at the end of the day, these companies want, you know, the best ideas, the best solutions. And if you actually want those, you probably should make an effort to hear from everybody.
Right.
You know what? I really like your trajectory. And I think it resonates with me as somebody who feels like I benefit professionally from having a variety of experiences. But I do think it's more of a new age thing. I think our parents, if they looked at our resumes, they'd be like, oh my gosh, you are all over the place. This is crazy. This is, you're never going to be able, you know, that's like the old school thinking, people who have worked at the same company for 30 years. Talk to me about kind of moving around and taking chances and deciding like, yeah, I don't like this. I'm going to do something else, or this works better for me. I think that's a fear with a lot of folks. And I think there is a group of us who are also like, yes, everyone should be doing this.
Mm. So did you talk with my mom before this conversation? I'm kidding.
Yes, that was the pre-interview I actually just did with her. So
awkward. Okay. So I would agree that my parents, when they look at my resume, often go, huh? But there have always been times where when big change had to happen, they at least understood the why and have been receptive to where it goes from there. Very tight-knit family. So yes, I think about these things often. But when it comes to taking chances, I do think that the way I and my siblings were raised really does factor into that willingness to take the chance. And I have described it in the past as I've never been scared to start from scratch. In fact, I find starting from scratch some of the most exciting times, regardless of the context. So whether it's I just burned it down and I'm starting over, or it's, you know what, I'm going to move on from here and start this new thing. That's never really scared me when we were, I have two other siblings, so there's three of us. When we were kids, my parents bought a piece of property in a very remote location and tore the house down and built it up from the ground up. And I have these very clear childhood memories of like maybe doing stuff I shouldn't have, but was very cool at the time, like roofing as a child. my mom coming home, and finding my dad on the roof with three kids helping him shingle and being like, what the heck? What are you doing? But so this is normal to me, this idea that it's like, okay, this is a little crazy, but let's try this thing. So I credit my, whether it's good or bad, but I credit my parents with building that in us, this idea that starting over is okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a little bit of, my mom would call it risk-taking tendencies. I'm, of the three of us, I think the only one who's skydived and motorcycled. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that I'm like, woo! So the actual idea of risk is exciting, whether it's focus on the reward or just the actual lived experience is something that I value greatly. Again, I'd credit my parents with teaching that really early on. So when I think about career paths, one of the things I most commonly hear from people who are on the precipice of a career switch, because I deal with career switchers most frequently, is self-doubt and fear. The self-doubt is, I don't know if I can do it. The fear is like, what if it doesn't work out? Which I think those are two valid questions. And I've always been a huge proponent of having the safety nets, the like, well, if it doesn't work out, what then? We go back to where you are now. Is that terrible? No. Okay, great. There's times where the what if is too great. And it's like, okay, maybe now is not the right time. That's okay. I'm not saying that people have to make change all the time. But I do think that the self-doubt, every single time I've run into it, when we come back months to years later, it's like, look back and remember where your headspace was and look at where you are now. And oh my God, in that moment of helping someone achieve that change, like it's been one of my driving motivators since I went into crisis intervention and then switched into personal training. And I take great joy in helping people discover that part of themselves. And there isn't a formula that works for everyone. But I often find myself seeing in people capabilities and like directions and potential that once it's spoken to them, they're like, oh, okay. Oh, you know, you're right. I can do that. And sometimes it just takes that external perspective to really see the potential paths in front of you. So if I were speaking to a career switcher who just wasn't sure, that's the first thing I'd be digging into, like pulling apart like the strengths, the directions, the potentials, and just helping them kind of work through that, because it's so consistent, that fear, self-doubt. But once you remove the self-doubt and like enjoy the ride, it's a very different outcome in that, you know, a matter of weeks to that.
Do you think that there is a direct correlation between you being a risk taker and your martial arts career? I mean, it seems pretty like risky. And I'm imagining you started to do that pretty young in your life, like when your brain was really developing, yeah. And then continue to take risk, like put yourself in danger. You know, in a way, and kind of challenge yourself in a way that, let's say, like most young people and most adults are not doing. Do you think that that has something to do with the way you show up in these professional spaces?
Crap.
Are you like a black belt?
I have a couple black belts. Yeah.
You have just a couple, like
just yes, a couple.
Same. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So probably joy. I just had a flashback to, I did start at a very young age, and I started in Taekwondo with my older brother. And I had this flashback to him lining up the kids my age, I was about six at the time, in little crouched, you know, like leapfrog.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So lining us up, but side by side, not end to end, side by side at the base of a stack of, do you remember aerobic stepper stackers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he lined us up in a line, and I remember him sprinting from across the room and dive rolling over us. So a dive roll is like a leaping somersault where you jump over a thing and then you land and you somersault out of it. And I'm thinking about this now. And in retrospect, if I saw some 10-year-old lining up a bunch of 5-year-olds to jump, like I would lose my shit. Don't do that to my kids. But that was normal.
Any adult around was like, oh, look at them playing, having fun.
They were adding the kids. Like they were trying to increase his range when I think. And so, yeah. And they used to push the height too. And they like height and distance were things you have to factor in when you're going to do a dive roll. I would say that normalized a lot of like, well, you have to push the boundary to get better, stronger, faster. You have to take the risk to grow. And I'm going to say that that's been a consistent, well, of course, assumption my entire life. And I actually can't remember a stretch of time where I've been really happy and content when I'm not doing something like that. There was a while where I'm like, am I deranged? You know, I've gone through a process of realizing that it doesn't have to be to the extreme and that I can scale it and that I can, you know, find areas in myself to grow that don't require flinging myself across a room over top of a bunch of obstacles. But the process for me with martial arts has gone through a pretty wide evolution because I mentioned I started in Taekwondo quite young and then I quit right before my first black belt when I was 11 or 12. And then I didn't train until I was about 18. And I at the time was like, I'm not into it anymore. And then around 18, I was like, why am I mad all the time? And then I got back into a completely different art, some kickboxing, some karate. And I ended up as a young adult being like, I should be doing the thing that is most challenging. And at the time I was doing my undergrad, which it turned out was not super challenging. I was a little disappointed with the education experience. It's just the program I chose. At the time, I was just like, well, this is the time of my life where I want to come out of these 4 years and have more than just the degree. I want to have other stuff, which so I started volunteering. I got really into karate and I was like, I'm going to get my black belt in karate, not Taekwondo.
Right.
That's when I got the first Dan with Goju-Ryu Karate. And then when I moved out west, I immediately found a place to start training. They very quickly hired me, and that's a Taekwondo school. So I went back through the whole ranks and got my black belt there and opened my school in Taekwondo and earned my second degree. So I was being facetious when I'm like, oh, I've got a couple. But as an adult, a woman who had, you know, been through really wide ranges of experience that women go through, I found jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is a completely different martial art. It's grappling. It's like a submission wrestling is the best way to describe it. And to go to a class as a woman, like I would have to sit in the parking lot before going in for a good 10-15 minutes and just kind of like psych myself up, mm-hmm. because it's a really male dominated, it's a young martial art, really male dominated. They didn't have women coaches. Most of the schools didn't even have a separate change room for women when I was starting. So I was just, it's like, it's not a woman friendly space. And I would have to go and I would have to navigate my own learning while mitigating other people's egos and making sure I was choosing the right training partner so that I didn't get injured, because that's a risk at the beginning. You can get injured if you've got someone who doesn't know how to control themselves, or if you've got someone whose ego gets flared up because you're a woman.
It was really,
it took a lot of, do I even want to be doing this? And like, I'm so sore the next day, what am I doing? But super challenging, and very much reframed how I thought about movement, which at the time, for someone whose life was basically immersed in movement, that's kind of a big deal. I was like, okay. So long and short, it changed a lot about how I think in terms of capability, just cemented the idea that it's okay to start over. It's okay to rebuild, and that risk isn't as scary as it seems. Jiu-jitsu is also the art I tell most women that they should try sometime. It teaches you a different way of moving, a different way of taking up space. And I use the metaphor of before I started jiu-jitsu, I went to downtown Vancouver fireworks show around the Olympics time, or a firework festival. And if you've ever walked through a really tight crowd, you know how you can kind of feel like a ping pong ball?
Yeah. Like, yeah, like you're going to just fall.
Yes. In the yeah. Like, oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. And then after about 4 years of jiu-jitsu, 4 or 5 years, when I was like, wow, I move differently. I feel like I stand on the ground differently. Same festival, same location, same tight crowd. And I was like, they're getting out of my way. What is different? Because I was suddenly walking down the street and I was not the ping pong ball. People were adjusting their path so that I felt like I was cutting through the crowd. And I had this moment of like, what is different? And then I thought through like, the core stability, the how I feel like I take up space, the fact that I just spent 4 years relearning how to impose my physical will over somebody else. Like, So it felt like a different way of taking up space, which if you're thinking about martial arts, Joy, and I shouldn't assume that you haven't done any, but if you are ever thinking about trying a new art, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, do it.
Okay. I actually have a gym right down the street. I can walk to it.
Do it.
I think they offer jiu-jitsu and they offer a couple other things too, but amazing. I actually just saw the paper that I had taken with the information on it. And I was like,
Think about it.
Yeah.
It's incredibly satisfying and you learn a lot about yourself.
And clearly the confidence,
Taking
a space like that, you're walking through that crowd with confidence of like, you're going to get out of my way.
That's what it felt like, consciously. Yeah, because I didn't have that clear thought, but they were just moving because of the way I was taking up space. Like when I think about how women are typically taught to take up space, it's like, right, we're supposed to make ourselves smaller. And that is not the way.
That is not the way. There are people listening right now who want to be more like you. They want to take chances. They want to take up space. They want to live their life using their intuition and following their heart. And just doing what feels right in the moment. And they're having trouble. They can't. They're stuck in old systems. They have too many people in their ear telling them it's not the right way. They won't be successful that way. They're scared. What would you say to them?
I started talking about how I'm logging in from the woods. I think that our brains get so full of noise, busyness, other people's opinions, our own self-doubts. You know, I do this exercise with people where it's trying to help them understand the difference between the cumulative effect of what you've experienced in your life versus who you are when you're born as a baby. Like the difference is time, right? Time and circumstance, and it shouldn't actually impact or change your self-worth as a person, the value that we have as humans. But I find people struggle with the exercise when their brains are too full. Like if it's impossible to shut off the anxiety associated with how people are perceiving you. And I think until something is done deliberately to shut that off, to allow yourself to think through the things that you need to think through, it becomes very difficult to even plan forward. So if I were to say, here's a thing you should do, you know, I know a lot of people will take the path of meditation, flow movement, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter what you choose to do, just take the time to be with yourself and take that time, and it will only make it easier for you to make the plans, make the decisions, and make the changes.
I love that. And silencing things also, because we are just so overstimulated. I always am like worried about how often there's a TV on in my house, or I'm on the phone, someone's texting, calling, there's music playing. You could hear voices from outside, the neighbors, like there's just so much stimulation. The birds are chirping like they're in a sold out concert. It's like, can everyone just
Yes.
But you get used to it, and you think that you're being reflective, and you think you're meditating, and you think you're having a moment alone, but there's still so much going on. So I love that advice. And I know that our audience is going to take your advice, right?
Oh, good.
And I think so many people have been searching for something and haven't been able to name it. But then when they see people who are taking chances, going to the woods when everyone's in the city, or moving, or taking a new job in a completely different career when they feel stuck in their own, all of these things are signaling to them like, I need to do something different. But there's just so much fear. So I think, and I hope, and I know that this episode will be very, very helpful to them.
Thank you, Joy.
Yes, thank you so much. If you're one of those people who are nervous about big changes in your life, but you feel stuck where you are, I hope this episode inspires you to spend more time with yourself and get centered and figure out what you really want, and then make it happen. Good things wait on the other side of fear. Have a good week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.